A new wave of brutal violence has engulfed Mexico, and there's been a murder victim recorded every 20 minutes this year. After several years of falling drug crime, the very worst of the drug wars is back, with over 11,000 people murdered in the first 5 months of the year. And if you do the math, it does work out at one every 20 minutes on average. Even for a country that has had a higher death rate than most war zones for the past decade, this sudden surge is a major worry. The three main cartels at the heart of it all are Los Zetas, the Sinaloa cartel, and the Beltran cartel. Now, I've been speaking with Ed Vulliamy, writer for The Guardian and The Observer, and author of A Mexica, War Along the Borderline. And I started by asking him just what's happening that the cartels have thrust Mexico into chaos yet again.
With Mexico, there is, as Charles Bowden said, you know, there is no control room where people know what's going on. I use the term black box. I mean, this has no black box. I mean, we don't know what's going on, but the plates are shifting again, which means that that the plaza is quiet. It means something's happened in the endless sort of almost narco genealogy of the cartels, in this sort of endlessly shifting relationship between the cartels and the state. And whatever it was that led to the extradition of the most powerful and best protected drug lord in the world, Chapo Guzman, to face, trial eventually, but time in a jail from which one suspects tunnels will not be dug in New York, cannot but have huge ramifications. I mean, it means that territory's up for grabs again. There is, as we understand it, an internecine war within the cartel, the Sinaloa cartel of Guzman. There is also a lot of, people might know about this bizarre story whereby he got a famous Mexican actress to act as an interlocutor with Sean Penn to discuss a biopic, a big blockbuster real life narcos movie with him at the center of it. And I think he had in mind sort of Sean Penn to be involved, possibly even play him, absurd as that might sound. But and whatever Sean Penn was doing, we don't know. There will have been people in Mexico, within the cartel, certainly, and possibly within the government too, who say, you know, Mr. Guzman, this is business, not show business. Enough is enough. If Guzman was as well protected as I think he is, and I'm not the only one, if this endless series of so-called escapes and sort of tunnels that seem to find their way into the Shah in the most guarded cell in the Americas, if it's true that he was protected, then there are going to be people in the government who don't necessarily want to run the risk of being in a biopic about Chapo Guzman. If Guzman wanted to tell all, there will have been all sorts of people against whose interests it was to be in this bloody film.
I think he was, as you said, extradited to the United States, and he's locked up in an American jail.
Yeah, having never really thought he would be, I think.
Yeah, the charges that he will face, I mean, the likelihood, and I don't know enough about how closely linked he can be to murders and so on, the likelihood is that he would spend the rest of his natural life behind bars. Does he have anything to sell to the Americans that might change that?
It's a very, very good point. My sort of narco nerd response, and please bear with me and forgive me, has to go back to the leader and founder of the Zetas, a man called Osiel Cardenas Guillen, who was similarly arrested in Tamaulipas, extradited, and went on trial in Houston, Texas. He's still in jail. Not a minute of that trial was held in open court. Colleagues of mine who work for the local papers there just tried every morning to get in, and every morning they were asked to leave with the session in camera before Chapo or the judge, Osiel or the judges came into court. He's in. He's down for drug trafficking, multiple murder, terrorism, all sorts. But we don't know what he offered up. We don't know why he was in court, and it is understood that he will, at some point soon, or in the medium term, be out. Now, Chapo Guzman is a far more famous figure than Ossiel Cardenas Guillen, although not necessarily another level of importance. Ossiel was terribly important. But can Chapo offer anything? Well, the Wachovia Bank, and as you know, your lawyers can relax, we can say this, they've admitted it, the Wachovia Bank has laundered, up to hundreds of billions of dollars of his money over the years. He can name names. You can't just get that kind of money into America without some cooperation. Where does the Federal Reserve fit into all this? How did the money actually get there physically? We've got some idea, but not the whole picture. So he can go that, he can start naming people in his money laundering and distribution network in America, which might be embarrassing. That money is reinvested somewhere. He will have perhaps some idea as to where in the so-called legal economy. And back in Mexico, he's got an awful lot of friends in high places that he can name. So, you know, in a way, his best defense, you know, if we were Chapo's lawyers trying to put this together, we would say, well, you know, let's do kind of, you know, a Samson tied to the columns and bring the whole damn thing crashing down. Mm. Now, there are going to be people in the United States and Mexico who do not want that to happen. So, you know,
so you'd suspect that if he tried to do that, and there will be people like you and I who suspect that he will try to parlay some sort of deal for himself. But you'd have to think, with all that money floating around, he's really got to be dead man walking in a Mexican prison or in an American prison.
Well, yes. I mean, in American prison is going to be rather trickier because, you know, what gangland in America calls, you know, the Mexican mafia, it's in the jails, you know, and we talk about that as a given. What does that mean if you're the boss? whose side, who is on whose side, why, and now they've got some kind of access to him. But, in Mexico, you know, he should have been a dead man walking for decades. He never is. He's a dead man. He's a very alive man. Sorry, tunneled out every time. He's a very alive man who's allowed to bring his extended family in for a 5-day Christmas party, complete with prostitutes, mariachi bands, and unlimited supplies of cocaine. That nobody was trying to kill him in Mexico, even though many people had the chance to do so. I'm sorry, you know, I can't come up with the answers. As I keep saying, you know, we don't know. All we can do is try our best guess. Mm.
So if we see Ed, if we see a rather Mexican-looking gentleman with a moustache arriving in Connemara, renting a big house behind high walls, it could be Chapo on the witness protection program.
Yeah, well, I mean, lucky him if it is Connemara. Yes, absolutely. We don't know. But I mean, that is not impossible. I mean, as I said, you know, the only precedent for this is Ossiel, the founder of the Zetas, sworn enemy of Chapo Guzman. You know, he's still in jail. No one knows what deal he did. But the word is he's coming out at some point, you know, having been accused of things that should have had him inside forever. Yeah. There are all sorts of other really interesting things going on within the Sinaloa cartel. I mean, we must remember, these are businesses, and they're very good businesses. These people understand markets, how money moves and why, better than a lot of other companies. They're not going to go bust. They're dealing with the perfect commodity. It can be sold at any quality, the good stuff to the rich and the crap in the ghetto. There will be no recession, unfortunately, for the junk they peddle. And you know, as in any business, there are rivals on the boardroom. And I think there is also, you know, it's going to be fascinating as this thing maps out. There's a kind of, you know, rather vulgar version of a Shakespearean or Greek tragedy going on within the cartel. There are sons, Los Chapitos, the little Chapos, who apparently don't like each other very much and are fighting for control. Meanwhile, there's another figure called El Mayo, who is in the back running the whole thing, making sure, you know, he didn't give a damn about biopics or anything. He just wants to keep the product rolling, keep the business going, and maintain the status of the cartel as the biggest criminal organization in the world, with a lot of help from what we call the legal economy.
And that is the question. With so much money involved in all of this, so many deaths, we're told a death every 20 minutes in Mexico in these drug wars, you have to wonder who's running Mexico, how much of Mexico is, if you like, legal, and how much of it is completely extrajudicial.
Absolutely. Who's running Mexico? Well, you know, if it isn't the Sinaloa cartel, then it has to be people on fairly good terms with the Sinaloa cartel and vice versa in order to keep the whole thing together. And this is what we've been saying, you know, a group of us now for years, and we're starting, I think, to get through. You know, forget cops and robbers. You know, forget our healthy, moral, upright society against a bunch of brown people who are trying to contaminate our youth. You know, in a way, the amounts of money, as you rightly say, Pat, are so enormous that the legal economy condemns itself to criminality simply by absorbing these hundreds of billions of dollars and reinvesting them, quote, legally, unquote. Likewise, the cartels condemn themselves to legality. They have to be good businessmen. They have to know about the tourist trade, the hotel building trade, the construction trade, the oil business, because they're in all these. And, you know, I think where all this is leading, we hope, is to a realization about the lie of legality. that this line in the sand that has dominated the narrative with films like The Godfather and Narcos and whatever, you know, is a lie. It's not only a fantasy, it's a lie.
Now, the way to combat this, Donald Trump has suggested a wall which will keep people out. Whether it could ever keep drugs out, I don't know. But the other approach would be in some way to choke off the market in the United States. Either of those two initiatives looks doomed to failure.
Well, I don't think the wall is going to really make much difference. I mean, it'll make a lot of difference to, you know, poor sods. And they're now all from Central America, mostly in Central America and Haiti. I mean, the thing about the irony with the wall idea is that the Mexicans are against it, not because it's going to sort of stop their people from trying to get into the United States, because now most of the people waiting, pathetic, awful, poignant shelters and things by the prospective wall in the cities north of Mexico are from Haiti, El Salvador, Honduras. Of course, Mexico doesn't really want them hanging around. They would much rather see them cross over into Texas or California. You know, the wall doesn't have much effect on drugs. I mean, the vast majority of the drugs coming to the U.S. from Mexico comes through at so-called ports of entry, the huge termini of trade. In trucks, it isn't backpackers hiking across the desert getting stopped by a wall with a load in the back.
So the wall won't make any difference. What about the idea of trying to kill the market in the United States for these commodities?
Well, that is it, and not just the United States. I mean, you know, I've always argued that the answer to this isn't necessarily legal. You know, people talk about legalization, but and that may help and make sense for places like sort of Camden Town or North Dublin or Greenwich Village in New York or sort of smarter bits of Chicago where the kids like to smoke weed and the posh people like to snort coke. But it's not going to. I mean, but the demand's still going to be there, and the question is who's going to make it. Well, we're saying people make it now because they know how to do it. So they'll simply end up working for a big pharmaceutical company instead of the Sinaloa cartel. Doesn't make much difference, to be honest. I think, you know, the solution, again, there's no black box. I'm not sure there's a solution either. But I think it needs to be political. I mean, the pandemic of bad drugs in the barrios of the Americas and, you know, God help us, they'll be in Africa soon. Is because of poverty. You know, people don't take hard drugs, you know, to make the party go with a bang or sex better or music sound better. They do it because they're desperate. They want to self-obliterate. Their lives are so awful. You know, that is a political problem. And as for our societies, I don't think there is going to be a, quote, solution. There is going to be a solution, but I don't think there's going to be an improvement until we just sort of ask ourselves, why are our societies entirely, apparently, dependent on drugs? What is it? And confront that. I think this thing has to be torn out by the roots, not with pieces of legislation or walls.
Yeah. And finally, Ed, the whole question of the transfer of billions of dollars from north of the border into Mexico. Now, obviously, a lot of it comes back for investment, quasi-legal investment in the United States. But is that a concern to people, just the dollar exodus out of the American economy into the hands of Mexicans?
Yes. I mean, everything's going in all directions. Don't forget. And thanks for bringing that up. I mean, you know, the hundreds of billions, of course, go into the United States and Europe, but a vast amount of dollars are coming out again, back into Mexico through. I mean, I think remits from places like Western Union are now something. It's the third biggest pillar of the Mexican economy. I mean, you know, poverty is an export in Mexico to the United States, and there's no sign of that stopping as the peso collapses and America starts to build up an economic protectionist wall, even if not a physical one. And the guns. I mean, you know, sort of Donald Trump's talking about a wall to stop people coming north. We're not hearing very much about what he's doing to stop the, I think it's 3 gun stores for every mile of the border. And there are nearly 2,000 miles of border. So, yes, I mean, what is the wall for, and will it have any effect on, as you say, the flight of dollars, the importation of dollars, and the flight of guns south? Not in my view, for what it's worth.
Ed Vulliamy, writer for The Guardian, The Observer, and author of A Mexica, War Along the Borderline. Ed, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
It's always a pleasure, and thank you all.